cue. Welcome to Highway Diary. I'm your host, Eric Hollerbach. With me, Corey Williams and Justin Evans. You guys just battled each other at Sunday Roast Battle at the Lawn Nui. You know, Justin took it in two rounds. He won the first two. Boom, it was over. Corey was telling me afterward he's a little disappointed. How do you feel, you know?
I feel like I got my ass kicked. That's basically what I feel like.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's only one way to settle this for the audience. Let's play what happened.
Corey Williams and Justin Evans, ladies and gentlemen. All the way from Hattiesburg, representing the Hub City guys. Corey Williams, Justin Evans. They rode together. They took 15-minute shifts driving, sucking each other off. They're from Mississippi. It's cultural. All right. Wow. I'm excited. They've been riding for a whole month. Here we go. Gonna pass. Corey, you're starting. Passing it to you. You have 1 minute. Ready and battle.
Justin, your teeth are so yellow. It looks like you've been eating out Big Bird's ass. I'm sorry. Man, you were so broke. Anytime one of your skanks calls, you have to decide whether to drive 10, I'm sorry, walk 10 miles or stay home and fuck your blow up dog. Oh, wait a minute, Ma. You clean Sally in a moment. Man, you're worthless. You fuck skanks and you mooch off of talented people. I didn't realize Kevin Federline had copycats, but fucking here you are.
Oh, shit.
You like to rap, you think you're thug nasty. Man, you're just the white trash version of Eminem. You've got such a drug problem, man. Pretty much anything you can put up your nose. You've had more shit up your nose than freaking Jesse Pinkman. It's gotten so bad that Whitney Houston set up an intervention for your ass.
Time! Wow! Ruthless! Ruthless! Okay, I don't know how Justin's coming back from that. How do you feel it? Has your ego been burned? A little shaken up, a little emotional? That's to be expected. You might move your bowels. Here we go. Here's the retort. 3, 2, 1, battle.
Corey, what's it like being 22, fat, bald, from Mississippi, and a virgin? Corey loves Laura Tabs, Ambien, and Goldfish crackers. Corey's mom makes him sleep on the wet spot in the bed. When I get done fucking her. I'm just kidding about fucking Corey's mom. She actually died in childbirth. Her body couldn't take the stress of giving birth to a real-life Elmer Fudd.
Jesus!
Be very, very quiet. Corey's hunting comics.
You have 10 seconds left.
Corey Williams looks like he ate Robin Williams.
Oh my God.
Give it a hand. That was round number one in the books. Ooh, I feel punch drunk. What happened? I'm dizzy. Boo. The floor is yours. Justin takes round number one. He could just sweep this shit. If he wins this next round, shit's over. We're moving on. Wow, long way back. And you're doing all the sucking on the ride home if he wins, right? That's the deal? Okay. Here we go. Corey Williams, time to redeem yourself. 3, 2, 1, battle!
Justin, you smoke so much weed, your piss smells like scum. It's horrible. It really is. You look like Mick Jagger fucking, the result of Mick Jagger fucking Ringo Starr as David Bowie filmed it. Why? You have so little class. You even sold your mom's dirty panties on the internet for drug money. That's nasty. One of these days I want to remember this. Man, you're so lazy. The last time you were, you last time you went to work was in your mama's stomach and she was a Walmart greeter.
Corey Williams, okay, wow. He's sweaty, I'm in proximity, wow. Okay, I mean, you know, pun, how do you feel right now? Confident, a lot of confidence coming out of Justin. Here we go, one more minute, this could be it. We could go in the third round. One, two, three, battle.
On an average Friday night, Corey could be found on stage telling the same five tired black jokes over again.
Damn! Ow.
Or trolling Craigslist looking for an open-minded couple seeking a...
I saw that. I saw that.
What's with this mic?
St. Patrick's Day, we get done doing an open mic at the House of Blues. And I look, after the show, when it's time to shake hands with the comics and get high, I look over and he's flirting with a 16-year-old girl. All the girls in New Orleans on St. Patrick's Day, and you choose the 16-year-old girl to talk to. The Uncle Fester, the child molester, the motherfucker.
Shit is priming, that is time! Wow, round two is in the books. Betty Boo, the verdict is yours. The the executioner with huge titties is about to speak. Oh shit, it's over.
So what was going through your mind during that, Corey?
What was going through my mind was simply remembering my jokes. Getting up there with the light in my eyes, and I just blanked on a lot of them. So that was basically what happened.
Yeah.
Looking over at Justin's dumb face, smirking every time I tell one.
Now, you were very polite, Justin. You weren't trying to rub it in his face in the middle. You were just quietly poised, focused, like a laser, like a ninja. How'd you feel?
I was excited about it, and I was trying not to look at my notes, and I could feel my pulse in my throat, and I was trying not to sweat.
Yeah, yeah.
And... The audience was great. I was really happy to be there. And
well, I was happy to have both of you. I mean, no matter what happens, you guys got more experience. You know, you're thrown in the fire a little bit. You know, that was pretty crazy, right? It's like a different... It's like, what can you do with comedy? What can you do with stand-up? There's different, like, forms of it, you know? There's different forms of martial arts, you know? There's jiu-jitsu, there's Muay Thai. It's just a different way to kick somebody's ass, you know? A different way to utilize these joke skills, you know? How long were you guys obsessing over this for a while? Because I told you, like, a month ago about it, right?
I was obsessing about getting enough material, which turned out to be the wrong thing to be obsessing about. But, yes, I absolutely was. I was... stressing about it all up until I walked on stage, and when I walked on stage I was absolutely terrified.
Really? Right? Absolutely.
from the get-go.
Really? Would you have been comfortable just doing a set?
Absolutely.
So what about this scenario was terrifying?
Basically, it was just confidence in my material. My set is something I've done a number of times. I've had the repetitions. It's on my heart. This was new material. This was a whole new thing.
Sorry, I just wanted to make sure it was recording. Going.
Yeah. So, that was basically how it was.
Yeah.
Just not being comfortable, doing something different. And I think that with anything that you're trying to do that's new, you can either step into it, you know, just like being thrown into the water. You're either going to sink or swim. And, well, today I sank, but I think I'll swim next time.
Well, hey, you know, you got fucking notches on your belt in the Hard Knock. Now, we're also doing a show in Hattiesburg May 3rd, right? So you're promoting that now, you know? You came up through the Jamie Arrington fucking... am I saying that right? Arrington?
Arrington.
Arrington. I got a Jersey accent, too, so that's how I hit vowels and shit. But he has his thing at Hub City Comedy, you know? You came up through there, and now you're doing your own... You're wearing your own thing, you know? How's it feel?
It feels pretty good. It's a little nerve-wracking, but it's one of those things that you put so much work into it, and I'm just finding out that I really love promoting shows. I like setting them up. I like dealing with my performers, and it's just a really fun experience, really.
Yeah. So what have been your means of, you know, getting the word out there? How are you promoting it?
largely by social media, trying to use Facebook as much as possible. I've been able to post flyers in different places. I was even able to go on the USM, University of Southern Mississippi, radio station to promote it on their talk show.
Yes.
How long have you been doing stand-up, homie?
A year in July.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So, you feel like you're starting to walk, you feel like you're starting to run?
Recently, Corey and I have been out on the road for about a month, month and a half, trying to get as many mics in a week as we could. And I feel like we've both gotten stronger doing that.
Yeah.
And it's nice to meet people and network a little bit. And it's tiring, but it's fun.
Yeah.
And I feel like I've grown from it.
Yeah, yeah.
And this show, I was nervous about this. I had to get out of my comfort zone and write, like, roast stuff on my road dog, Corey. And it was a different experience, and I had to work out.
Did you feel bad when you were up there laying into him and the crowd was getting on his case? Did you feel bad, any remorse?
No, not at all.
You were loving it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is this bragging rights now for a long time? Are you going to rub this in his face all the time?
Time to time. Yeah, he's been sweet to me so far, so like, I don't know if I want to be a dick to him. But... yeah.
Awesome.
It was great.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the crowd, you know, and I just like this because, you know, this proves that on stage we can fuck with each other and we're all cool, and that's just what we're doing here. It's a comedy thing, you know. People say that people from Los Angeles are fake sometimes because they'll be nice to your face and then talk behind your back. But there's just like a level of professionalism that we can go at something as crazy as even ruthlessly trying to attack each other's insecurities, you know?
Absolutely. I feel that with us, it's a matter of we're not going to talk about you behind your back. We care about you. So we're going to tell it right to your face, and we're going to do it in front of everybody, and we're going to lay it bare as much as we can.
Mm-hmm.
And then afterwards, you know, we'll go get a beer and laugh it off.
Yeah, yeah. That's cool. It's a fucking coat of arms. We're fellow soldiers, you know. We're going in the heat of battle. This is what we're doing here. Yeah, it sucks sometimes. Sometimes, you know, you have a bad set and it you know, you get crushed. Sometimes you get crushed because you got fucking smashed in a battle, you know. It happens. It's all part of it. I felt like I started the show kind of shaky. You know, my sister got married. That was a great fucking...
You were a good host.
Thank you very much. You know, I just felt like I didn't start off quite as strong as I normally do just because I hadn't done stand-up. This was my first time doing stand-up in fucking 2 weeks, you know, so I was a little rusty going into this situation just because I'm making excuses. But I just feel like, you know, I was just getting drunk and partying in wedding mode, you know, for the last couple of days.
You came out to Hattiesburg and performed at the Neil House with us. That was fun.
Yeah, yeah. All those guys are really cool, you know. Yeah. I haven't had any problems. Everything's cool, you know.
Your set to start off with, I don't really want to comment too much on, but I do want to
comment
on the end and how you stifled, you know, the race war that was about to take place. And that was just a lot
tonight,
of fun.
That was funny, yeah.
Yeah, John Smith and Kyle, John Rowe and Kyle Smith at the end there. Let's play some of those clips with their permission, of course. It got a little crazy. I was trying to structure 3 minutes, 3 minutes, three, but then it just turned into a shouting match. Chaos ensued. The crowd was going crazy. Here's what happened.
Nigga, fuck your gut. Fuck that extra weight that you put on. Nigga, fuck that bean diet that you be on right now, nigga. Motherfucker, eat hobo food, nigga. Leave under the nigga. And drink nothing but that fucking hard liquor. Nigga, night train at all times. Motherfucker, you play dominoes under the sycamore right now, nigga. You know, wow! Predators! That was the going after your physical insecurities round! Woo! Looking ass motherfuckers, Betty Boo, my main bottom bitch! Who won that round?
Brain.
John
Bro got that one, baby.
Oh! It's 1-1! I know who's paying attention to this round! Bro, I'm just trying to reiterate. I'm just trying to reiterate that it was a split decision last time. You know, this is redemption. Kyle Smith won by a little bit. Well, I'm not bringing up ancient history here. All I'm saying is 3, 2, 1, BAM!
First of all, nigga, fuck you. Bitch, I'm on the islands. I used to do backflips on the beach and dive into ocean.
get a couple of sand fishes, I put them up your ass, you bitch motherfucker. You make me so mad. If you was in jail, bitch, I'd get a nigga to rape you, nigga. He would eat your asshole. And when I say eat your asshole, I don't mean eat your asshole. I mean he would bite your asshole off. He would take your asshole off and you would never shit right again. You just poo in your pants for the rest of your life. You'd be farting, you'd be pooing. You'd be a poo in the fart ass motherfucker. You little bitch. Step up, you talk too fast because you got jewelry in your mouth. Third of all, fuck you, you hating ass motherfucker. I live on a budget for a reason. Look at the islands, we don't give a fuck about your capitalistic society with your bullshit ass rules and the motherfucker. We, as long as we got some good pussy in a sandwich, when we get home, we don't care. Third of all, shit, fuck you and your nipples. Wow, that's a tough island. I haven't heard of that island. Yeah!
It sounds good a little bit, but who knows?
My hair is beautiful, you know.
Going after his hair. Shit's getting personal. All right, final round. This is for all the fucking beans in the bean jar. Kyle Smith, how are you responding? 3, 2, 1, yeah!
Man, I feel sorry for them weak ass ankles that gotta support all that dumbass weight you got. Hey, bitch, you look like you breastfeed 15-year-olds, man. You got the calves of a grasshopper because you never lost the fat weight. You still got your baby weight on your fucking face, and your nose carries all your eyeballs right now. I'm not understanding. I'm looking here to see this between the fucking nigga. Fucking short ass shorts that don't go past your knees. I'm mad that you ain't got the capabilities to button up all your buttons on your shirt. You about to miss your neck because it look like an ET head. Drew Barrymore stands next to you as fucking bitch, you need to get on your push-up game because you're fucking, your chest hanging off you. Nigga, when the last time you seen your dick? Probably not in a few years.
You know, I think my dick bigger than you, bitch. Fuck you.
Oh, it's a wonder-looking ass.
I gotta respect the clock. Ladies and gentlemen, give these competitors a round of applause. Oh my god.
Go fuck the white man. Fuck the white man. The white man, give us a minute. We are niggas. I'm from the island, so I still a nigga. I'm still a nigga, and as niggas, we know how to talk about each other for 20 minutes.
Alright, yeah, try to start your race war on time, you know? So, Jesus. Hold on a second. Betty Boo. Betty Boo just listened to, she's got to judge the final round. It was still close, you know? This might be controversial as well. Here we go. Hold on. Yeah, okay. Alright. Okay. Kyle wants to weigh the laps. Boo in the air. Thanks, John Rowe won the roast battle. I'm listening to Boo. Boo here thought Kyle Smith won the roast battle. Hold on. Betty Boo, I just want Betty Boo. She's got a doctorate in street smarts. She knows how to rob you, sell you drugs, whatever you need. I'm going to her fucking opinion. Betty Boo.
I'm having a hard time with this one. I really am. But I have to say that John Rowe was accused of being the whitest black man in comedy. And although that joke was not used, they should really call John Rowe Buck White instead of Buck Wheat, right? I think that Buck White got it this time.
Buck
White got it.
What? You're goddamn right. You don't know nobody
but
Buck White.
John Rowe took this one. Wow. Controversial. All right. Wow. I'm gonna get a
flush. I am so teddy bear material.
I cannot.
Your mama like it.
All right. The Groupon comments are gonna be really aggressive on this one. I gotta deal with so many emails after this. All right, guys, get out of here. I'm sorry. John Rowe took it. It's controversial. I don't know.
Controversial.
Thanks, Betty Boo. Wow.
We're back. Wow. I mean, the building almost got lit on fire. You know what I mean? Like, I was getting accused of being some kind of slave master. You know what I mean? Trying to keep everybody on time. I don't know. How else are you supposed to... What, you just go up there and everyone gets 10 minutes and then until the fucking audience leaves? You got to structure some kind of battle. Did you feel like the structure was unfair of 1 minute, 1 minute?
No, I didn't feel it was unfair. It was definitely a new experience, I think, for both of us. But absolutely not unfair. Right. It was something to get used to, for sure.
We're all white people. We like time. We like knowing boundaries.
I liked it. I was nervous about a third round, so I was glad I got half of some of my good stuff in there.
Yeah.
In one. So
you just started. You just went out the gate gangbusters as your strategy. And did you have another minute left over, or what do you think?
I had a few things I forgot to do in the first two rounds.
Yeah.
I wasn't trying to look at my notes on stage, but fuck Corey anyway, so, yeah.
So you're on radio. Are you putting that out on social media? Are you handing flyers out door-to-door in Hattiesburg? Are you...
Not so much door-to-door. I am generally a pretty talkative person, and I know a lot of people in the Hattiesburg area, in which case I'll just start up a normal conversation and just be telling them about my day and what I'm doing, and then, hey... I'm promoting this show, and I'll hand them a flyer.
Or the racetrack.
And we are...
The horse racetrack.
Not the horse racetrack, the drag racetrack.
Oh.
We have the wonderful opportunity to allow them to do a lot of the publicity for us. I was able to print up handbills for them to hand out for every person that came in the gate. And it's wonderful because they actually have a pretty big event coming up in this upcoming weekend, in which case the word should spread really rapidly.
Yeah. So what kind of venue are you trying to sell out at? You know what I mean? Do you have a door deal? Well, I can't get into your business. How big is the venue?
It's a nice place. It's the Dollar Show Box in downtown Hattiesburg. Ben Schimper owns it. It was a nightclub called Taste, and he bought it. And he owns the Boom Boom Room on Front Street in Hattiesburg. And he bought this place, and it's like a larger Boom Boom Room. It's they got a beautiful stage, nice curtains, everything, lights, and they have a golden dollar sign hanging from the ceiling.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful thing because he mentioned Ben Schimper is pretty much the go-to man in Hattiesburg, which is a music town in the world of music. And this is his first comedy show at his venue. Mm-hmm. We are hoping to be able to sell about 350 tickets to the show. That's our goal. And it would be amazing if we were able to do that. And so if we fall a little bit short of that, we'll be okay. But we're going to shoot for the stars on this one.
Yeah, I mean, just 100 tickets. 200 is fucking great. 350.
75, I'd be happy.
Yeah, we just got to get the seating arrangement so everybody's sitting exactly in the front, you know?
Absolutely.
But yeah, it's also been crazy, you know, going to Bourbon Street with my folks these past couple days, you know. We got hurricanes. I saw some, you know, it's weird when your dad's in there and all of a sudden people take their titties out, you know what I mean, during this fucking bachelorette party and stuff. It's been crazy. A lot of just drunken. We had some hurricanes, and I was pretty hungover this morning. So I'm just letting you know what happened to my past weekend.
I had a toothache that turned to an abscess. And Monday, it was a toothache. I go to the emergency room with a swollen face. They give me a shot in the butt and a prescription for penicillin and Tylenol 3s with codeine. I go to open mic on Monday. Tuesday morning, my face is swollen up beyond recognition. And I go back to the emergency room, and they make me spend the night there. They gave me five IV bags of antibiotics and some Lortabs, and I ate dinner there, and the swelling went down, and they gave me a stronger prescription.
Were they worried that the bacteria was going into your brain from your fucking the root of your tooth?
Yeah, my blood had been poisoned. I had a CAT scan. and when you get a CAT scan, they inject you with this chemical that expands all your blood vessels, and your body gets really warm, and it feels like an orgasm, and it was incredible. It probably cost me $1,000, but it was a good little.
It was worth it for the CAT scan.
His face looked like the end of a heavyweight boxing match, the losing participant in the fight. It was so swole up, and only on one side looked like somebody was just jabbing him with the right hand the entire time.
Let's take a picture for the podcast. Fucking, oh wait, get out my, I'll get out of your leg. Oh wait, all right, 3, 2, 1. All right, cool. So what's going on with your twofers? Have you not been taking care of them enough? Have you?
I brush my fucking teeth. I had braces as a kid, and it's hard to get in there, and they kind of fucked them up a little bit.
Did the braces fuck your teeth up?
Yeah, actually, it was hard to get in there, so I got cavities, and I broke a lot of brackets for drinking Coke. But
from Coke?
Yeah, drinking soda, eating Doritos. I had a palate spacer. It's this thing that's like a retainer that you put in the roof of your mouth.
Yeah.
And they give you a key where you're supposed to crank it 4 times every night, and it expands your bones and your fucking skull. And it was torture.
And after all that...
Yeah, after all that, I kind of not wanted to go to the dentist anymore.
So every night you had to self-inflict a mouth widening?
Yeah, my mom did it. I laid with my head back... And my mom put this key, it looked like a bent paperclip, into the roof of my mouth in this retainer-like device, mm-hmm. and just cranked it a bunch of times, spread my palate.
Did your dentist ever give you ether, and then he couldn't fit his whole dick in your mouth? So then he's like, hey, go home every night and widen out your mouth so I can get my fucking hog in your face next time you come over here. I can, like, you know what I mean? Hey, mom, stay in the waiting room, right? And then he starts getting the fucking vat of ether pumping.
Once, and he never called me back, and I'm disappointed.
That's rude.
Yeah.
Man, your teethers are in shambles, homie. Yeah. Why didn't you use any? You didn't go after his teeth enough. Did you have more teeth jokes?
I only actually had the one teeth joke.
Yeah.
But
What are there any things that you didn't say that now you're killing your punching yourself in the face that you didn't let him have it for, that you want to let him have it now on the podcast?
Oh, absolutely. I had a few things, such as the fact that he screws around with nothing but fat girls, in which case it's gotten so bad, Lane Bryant has started sending him catalogs to his home. So... There was a few little jabs here and there that I wanted to throw in there.
I missed that black girl you were dating. She was giving me eyeballs. I was hoping you'd bring her around one more time. I'm sure I could have fucked her.
It would be a first for you to date somebody that was less than 200 pounds.
That's nice.
So how would you feel about roasting somebody that was outside of your group of friends? What do you think about when there's real beef behind it? When there's real anger and animosity behind someone that you hated? Would you feel comfortable doing that battle?
I think I would revel in that opportunity.
You would like it way more?
I think I would. Because
that's what's been going on through my head. Go on.
Well, I just have it in mind. You know, this is my road dog. This is the guy that I'm always trying to support and build up. And now I'm doing the converse thing and trying to tear him down to his bare bones. And... I think I would rather do that to somebody that I've been having a beef with. I really do.
Justin, same question.
I think it would be a lot of fun. It throw me out there and make me try to attack somebody I hardly know. Maybe their jokes, you know, their material.
Mm-hmm. Just their appearance is always there, you know? Different interactions they had backstage with you.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of a comedy snob to a certain extent. I get a little bit tired of the dick jokes and just the typical, you know, run-of-the-mill, ha-ha, this is it. And I expect people to get better and get more intelligent with their material. So anybody who's doing, you know, their five-minute set, I could pretty much tear their material apart because it's like a 10-year-old wrote it, in my mind.
Right.
Eating ass and tender jokes. You know,
very common. But, you know, subjects, I have a bunch of eating ass material. You know what I mean? I don't think anyone does it well. I'm talking about eating ass.
I mean, I do it, so I don't want to make fun of myself.
So, you're also a filthy comic, Justin, especially. Yeah. Corey, you as well. I think you're more dark. I think Justin's more filthy, right?
I think I would go with that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's a little more filthy. I'm a little more, oh, you shouldn't say that.
So is it, do you ever feel like weird or that you're giving out weird sexual stuff? Do you ever feel exposed when you're doing stand-up?
A little bit.
Like you're blowing up your own spot?
Kind of. It's like an exhibition thing. And I get a good reaction from some girls now, you know. I'm getting laid more, fuck it, you know.
Ah, so you're putting out things that you want them to know about you sexually.
I'm not giving away any trade secrets or anything, but I'm doing all right for myself. Nobody's been off foot by anything I've said.
Do you think that the Hattiesburg broads are like, oh, you're doing stuff, you know, you're out there, this guy's wheeling and dealing, you know, Hattiesburg, the big Mississippi, look at this, it's city balls doing shows and stuff. You think comedy's helping you get laid?
The girl I've been seeing recently treats my comedy career like I'm a garage band, and she totally disrespects me about it, and she's kind of a bitch, but...
You gotta make her jealous.
The Hattiesburg girls are hot and cold with it. Either they're excited about the artistic side of it,
right?
Or they're upset that I don't have a 9-to-5 job.
Right, right.
I have a better relationship with my ex girlfriend than he does with the one he's screwing right now.
I do. You guys still, you know, giving each other some friends with benefits type of scenarios?
I've been working the angles, but so far nothing.
Okay, well. How about you? Do you feel like when you put out, like, dark stuff about your self, or when you put out, like, really dark, hard kind of material, do you feel like that affects you later on when people interact with you? They think that you're crazy?
I think basically most people think that I'm a soulless human being. Or racist, either way. That's generally...
Just a sociopath?
Just absolutely. Like, I would, you know, fuck a baby and at the drop of a hat. I think that's generally the vibe that I give off when I'm on stage. Now, when I'm off stage, I'm pretty jovial and so on and so forth, but they still got that in their mind. This is a rapist.
Right, right, right. Just for the record, have you ever been sexual with a baby? Or?
No, I've never been sexual with a baby.
I want the record to speak clean.
I've never done an illegal sexual act with anyone, just put it that way.
There was sometimes a machete was to a throat, but it was consensual and pre-planned.
Exactly.
And it was the tip of the knife was dulled.
Absolutely.
The whole thing
we didn't go all the way through. The trachea is still intact, just a little bit of bleeding on the skin. It's all good. It's all good.
That's hot. So it's good that we got the fucking Howlin' Wolf crowd in here. You know, that's how I'm trying to work angles of just being friendly to people. Every single time I got a show, one of the Howlin' Wolf guys comes over. You
Red
know what
Bean
I mean?
Was here.
Red Bean was here. They all support each
Nature
other.
Boy.
Nature Boy. Nature
Boy
did a set.
B.
And then Carrie B is going to do it May. You know, he'll do a set for me. So I think it's good to have, like, little... Instead of, like, fucking having clicks, you know, it's like, break up the click. How about one of your guys does... Every time I got a show, I'll take one of your guys. Every time you got a show, you take one of my guys. Like, there's no... you know, I don't like this, like clicks, you know what I mean? It's like, we're all doing the same thing. Let's just use each other's people. That's it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And crowds get tired of seeing the same people over and over.
Yeah,
so
if you go to the same venue and it's the same rotation of 8 people or whatever.
Absolutely. And people get tired of that and people stop going to shows because they think that that's always what it is.
Yeah.
So being able to introduce a new element or at least new to that crowd keeps it lively.
Yeah. Are there cliques in Hattiesburg or is it kind of small? It's all kind of one group.
Hub City Comedy is a great place. I'm from California, and I was happy that Hattiesburg had a comedy scene. And it's a great group of people. I love each and every one of them. It's like a second family, and they're really supportive. And
did you start doing it in Mississippi, or did you do it in Cali at all?
I wrote in California. I never did stand-up. So
Riverside,
California, yeah. Marina. I was born in Riverside General Hospital, and they tore it down, and it's a Lowe's now. So,
yeah. Fun fact: if anyone wants to visit where Justin Evans was,
it's the crystal meth capital of the country.
Lumber section. That's where your mom fucking breached your stupid face.
I was
ever.
Thinking.
I worked in the lumber section of Lowe's too.
I was thinking.
They fired
more
me
of...
for crashing a forklift because I was high.
I think it was more of, you know, the paint section, you know, and the paint thinners and pretty much anything that gives off a fume.
Yeah.
I worked grocery at Walmart, and they caught me fucking a fat cashier in the parking lot, and
there
I quit the next day.
Here.
What do you mean caught you? Where were you doing it?
In the parking lot of Walmart.
In the car?
Yeah, in my Jeep.
Yeah,
and the manager came out.
Did he just knock a flashlight on your window? It's like
she saw him coming, and I drove off real fast, and then I had to bring her back so she can get in her car and leave. It's my first podcast. I'm excited.
Cool.
This is fun.
Cool, man. So normally I have notes and stuff. I'm coming out of vacation mode here. Betty Boo is asking me if I want to get pizza. But that was a good, the comics were all getting along really cool. There was a nice group, you know, hanging out, enjoying each other's company. It makes everything worth it if everybody's, you know, getting along, having fun.
I felt like I got to know a few of the comics here a little better. It's people that I've met and talked to before, but it was a little more of a friendly atmosphere, I think, tonight.
As opposed to
just meeting somebody. And seeing them a couple of times, you don't really talk. You don't really get to know much about them.
Yeah.
And I think we just kind of crossed that little bridge after, you know, being coming down here for a little while and getting to know some of the regulars as far as comedians in New Orleans. And I think that was a really good thing as far as networking, as far as growing as a comic.
Mm-hmm. For sure, yeah. I've seen you guys come down here a bunch of times at the Howlin' Wolf and stuff, you know. God, I was there the night your fucking car got towed. That was the situation. You want to talk about that? What happened?
Basically, what happened is we're idiots, and we're just going to leave that one there. We got towed. We thought we were going to have to spend the night.
You guys walked into it. You guys parked in some kind of private lot.
Yeah, we parked in a lot and didn't pay. Like, oh, there's a bunch of fucking empty parking spots here. Let's just park here and get in and do the set. And we do the set, and it's raining, and we're trying to go home, and the car's not fucking there.
Mm-hmm.
So you gave us a cab ride, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was nice of you.
It was cool. You know, you offered to let us crash at your place a little bit, you know. I wasn't really comfortable with the whole proposition of, you know, us giving you a blowjob for the night, but, you know, it happens.
That's rent. You know what I mean? What, do you fucking think breakfast is free in the morning? What, am I your fucking mommy? No, you're sucking this D if you want to fucking stay at my place, you know? But it's like, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours, you know what I mean? Street law.
Absolutely.
Street law. That didn't happen, for the record. Okay, let's just put it there. People are starting rumors about me. He left, right, and center. You know what I'm saying?
Gas, grass, or ass.
I'm like an addict alcoholic. I like everything to the extremes. And I get as much as I can of whatever's around. And be it sex or fucking alcohol.
Yeah.
Just mostly pot, but...
And now you're addicted to stage time.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. My roommate was asking me, like, why are comics depressed and stuff? Or I was just trying to explain to him. I was like, you don't understand, like, you know, when you're hanging out with friends and, like, people are laughing, you're having some beers. It's a good time. Imagine that, like, condensed into 10 minutes, and if you're the only one making jokes and destroying a room of strangers that don't know you. Like, the level of dopamine rush in the brain is something that everything else feels like fucking boring, or, you know, just, it's not.
The adrenaline's incredible.
Yeah. See, so, the only part that's not fucked up about your life is when you're getting your fix of stage time. It's just this, like, focused amount of attention, which is, like, proving in some way that you're, like, a social master. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I think when you're on stage, you... Kind of what you alluded to is that you become the life of the party. And for that, 5, 10, 20 minutes, however long you're on stage, you are it. You are the, everybody's attention is on you, and how you deal with that is by making them hold on to their gut. And it is a wonderful feeling, and the truth is that between that and when you get off and have people come up to you and just tell you this joke was just absolutely hilarious, or I was laughing through the whole set, or whatever they may say, whatever compliments they may give you, it is just a high that you can't get enough of. Yeah.
I like taking your day or your life experiences, and it's like a 2-hour drive to some open mics, and your shitty week, and you condense it all into 5 or 10 minutes of attention, and you just throw it out there, and you get so much back. It's a fucking drug, and it's crazy, and it legitimizes my fucking day too, you know? Like,
yeah.
On the same lines of that, I think that any hardships or anything that you have to deal with throughout your week and throughout your life as a comic, it makes it a little bit easier. It makes it almost a happy occasion when you can retell that, when you can make that funny, when you can share these experiences on stage and get people to laugh. Because when I write another joke, or I tell another, or I have another experience that I can tell later, even though it may have been bad, as long as it has that end result, I think, hey, that was a victory.
Mm-hmm. It kind of puts your whole fucking week in context. It's like, it's been living up to this. It's kind of like a fighter, like training every day for a fucking boxing match or whatever.
Well, nobody wants to come and see a comedian that is good looking, smart, successful, has a beautiful wife, has a beautiful life, and never stubs their toe on anything. That's just not funny. Everybody wants to be that, but nobody wants to go see that. So the fact that we have these hardships, we are normal people, and we go through this stuff, that's where comedy comes from, is the adversity in life.
I need a fucking cigarette. I tried to get him weed the other night.
Yeah.
After Leon Blanda from the House of Blues, mm-hmm, came up to Hattiesburg, and he had a show, and I had a little bit of bud, and I smoked a bunch of joints with a bunch of different comics, and he took another comic home because his car broke down, so we're all piled in his truck, and at the end of the night, I kind of talk him into trying to buy some weed, and we go see my guy, and we give him the money, and he says, make a couple blocks around the block, and then meet me here, and I'll have the bud for you. We do that, and he disappears. We circle like 8 times, and he's not there. And then he calls from his phone, calls Corey, and says, I got arrested. I'm sorry, what do you want me to do? How often do the police let you call your friends and apologize when they arrest you with weed?
Better yet, we're driving around this same block, this dark block. If we had seen a cop car or blue lights of any kind or any kind of commotion, then we would have known what was up.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing like that happened. It was a quiet night, the whole nine yards. It was a straight up lie, and we know that. But it was just, it was hilarious, the audacity that he had.
I'm
and
kind
for such
of hurt.
A small amount
yeah,
of
it
money,
shows
it's like
colors.
I'm a good customer. I've gone to him a number of times with larger amounts of money, but this is the smallest amount of money that
I've known him as long as I've been doing stand up, and he's always been good to me. And it hurts that he would fucking do that. I guess he was fucked up and needed it. Fuck him.
I don't understand. He got arrested.
Now I
got
to shoot up his grandma's house.
Wait, I don't quite understand the details of the story. You went to go buy weed from a dealer, and then he said, hey, I'll have
man.
It for you in a second, and then he went and got arrested and just split?
He claimed he got arrested. Because he either ripped me off or he got arrested.
Oh, he took your money and
absolutely.
Said, oh, I see what happened.
Okay. The next day, he got a text message from
his quote-unquote mom,
saying that it was his mom. And she was wondering where he was and heard that he had gotten arrested. But for some reason, it doesn't make sense that how the mom
got the cell phone. And know to text you to finish the weed deal.
Absolutely.
So it's absolutely a paranoid fucking cocaine and story where he just needed a
fix. I went back to the hood today to get cocaine. Some bud from some different dudes that know him. And they say he's on his way over with some pills and some crystal meth. So I got a little dude to fucking beat the shit out of or something. I got a...
You didn't stick around and say, okay, let me see if this guy shows up not in jail.
Well, he's my friend and I want to talk to him and, like, show me some paperwork, dude, or what, like...
Or just give me some fucking weed now.
Yeah. I've had it happen before where they actually got arrested and it sucks. But
Mississippi Popo come down on weed pretty hardcore?
We have an initiative that we've been getting signatures for to make... For you get enough signatures, then we can vote on it.
Right.
For marijuana legalization. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a big deal.
As it is, I don't know if it's necessarily the state. I think it's more up to the individual precincts and individual cops, really, because I've heard a number of stories where somebody would have a small amount of weed and they would catch them in the car. The cop would just throw it on the ground, stomp on it, and tell them to leave. And then I've heard other times where they absolutely just dropped them, pulled them out of the car, slammed them on the ground, cuffed them, and thrown them in the back of the car. So I'm not going to say that it's a Mississippi thing. I'm going to say it's probably a precinct thing.
Oh, okay. Depending on what district you're in, that fucking... Absolutely. That general is telling them to go after it.
Right.
It's not a general. Police chief.
Right. I know what you meant. I knew where you were going. And I'll let you have your drunken, tired vacation mind.
I'm not even trying. I haven't had one fucking beer. I'm just fucking delirious. It's so stressful putting a show on.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's like my parents are here. God bless them. Like, everybody left today, right? And I'm dealing with my parents all day. I'm making phone calls, setting the show up. I'm stressed out. You know what I mean? I'm sure you're going to know what that fucking feels like May 3rd when you got the first thing. You know, I sold 37 things on Groupon and then 8 people redeem it in the night. And I'm not sure if this is a floating ticket, but it's on my mind. You know what I mean? And then I got to do stand-up first. Like, I'm not sure if you're MC of your show doing it first, but it's like you'll find out your mind is in all this administrative nonsense trying to get everybody in the door. Who paid what ticket for what? Do you got your ham stamp? Did that person get stuff at the bar? You know, all these people are talking about the customers coming in and who's got what ball rolling. And then it's like, okay, stop all that now. Be funny. You know what I mean? So I found it really kind of tricky to change gears a little bit. It's stressful to fucking run a show and to also perform on it, you know?
You ran out of the green room and jumped on stage.
Yeah.
Basically, it's the juggle between being the administrator and being the comedian.
Yeah.
Because you have to absolutely switch gears. It's almost like a light switch saying, all right, this is business, this is this. And then, hey, I've got to be jovial now.
Yeah,
no matter what's going on, I've got to leave it off stage. Go up, break the ice when you're the MC or the host or whatever you want to call it that particular day. You have to go up there, get people laughing, and make sure the show runs smoothly. All the time in the back of your mind, you've got your gears going about the administration side of it. Where are these tickets paid for? How many people we have in the audience? So on and so forth.
Yeah, it's tricky, man. Do you have any, are you going to, like, schedule the fuck out of that day where it's like, from here to here, I'm going to whack off. From here to here, I'm going to get, like, tickets. From here to here, I'm going to look at my set. From here to here, I'm going to do this. You know what I mean? Like a fucking samurai.
I think less on the particular day is going to be scheduled. I intend to have as many ducks in a row as possible before that day even comes.
Right.
In which case...
You can relax on the day.
Exactly. That way I can focus on being the host or the MC, which is what I'm going to be on the show. And really focus on my material and leave everything to run itself, essentially.
Are you nervous about going for 350 people, your first show? Like, you know, we had like... 20 in here or something at the La Nui in New Orleans, you know?
Well, I say 350. That's my top of the mountain, climbing Mount Everest number. I don't actually expect that. But I think that if I say that I'm okay with a lower number, then I'll relax. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. I want to absolutely do as much as I can to get people in the doors, get butts in the seats. That way, when it is a lower number, I can look at it at the end of the day and say, you know what, that turned out pretty good. But if I set that number lower, I feel like I'll never get past it.
Mm. So, are you planning on doing this once a month, or like how, you know what I mean?
Well, Hattiesburg actually has a beautiful comedy group. Mm-hmm. In which case, we have big names coming in on a regular basis. I wanted to do this show, and I intend to do another show. Probably not going to be doing it every month or every other month. More like every 3 to 4 months, mm-hmm. just because it is somewhat clustered as at the moment. And I want my shows to be more quality and less quantity. When I put on a show, I want people to know that this is going to be a professional deal and that they're going to come and have a great time and laugh their butts off every time and not necessarily so many times. That's my mindset right now.
Right, right, right. Yeah, do you feel like every 3 months, like, you know, you'll still have momentum from the last show and get people talking about it, you know?
Well, as I mentioned before, that comedy group, most people already are in the comedy mindset. So I'm interjecting another show into an already pretty busy world. Mm-hmm. Comedy is not going to be very far from anybody's minds. So I don't think my momentum is really going to be that hindered just because it's a continuously flowing river of comedy.
And how long have you been doing it again, Corey? You're a young guy.
I've only been doing this roughly, I've been saying 6 months for the past 3 months, so let's just say 9 months.
Mm-hmm. Are you skipping any steps? Are you skipping over people? Are you stabbing anybody in the back? Are you cutting in line, Corey Williams?
I don't believe I am. There are a few that do think that. However, I tried to make sure that I crossed my T's and dotted my I's. I went to the leader of what we call Hub City Comedy.
Yeah.
And I spoke with him. I got his input on it. I got his advice, so on and so forth. And when it was all said and done, I had his blessing. And he was the one that I was really concerned about stepping on somebody's toes. Mm-hmm. So I don't feel like I'm stabbing anybody in the back because he gave me his blessing. Mm. Anyone else is pretty much just lucky to get or happy to get what they get and not really too concerned with anything else.
See, I feel like we share a philosophy of abundance. I think we share a philosophy of the more good shows there are, the more good shows there are, the more good opportunities there are.
Absolutely.
Everybody wins.
Absolutely.
It's not like some kind of mafia situation where it's like, no, I run this shit, you know.
Yeah, I don't feel that it should be a turf war when it comes to comedy, and I find that has been in a number of cities and a number of comedy groups where people think they've been doing it a while and they think, well, this is comedy here and I run this and I say what this is how this goes and this is how this goes. And it's just not right. I don't believe it is. I think when you go back to the, you know, so-called American dream, the whole principle behind it was that you work to better yourself. You don't wait on someone else to help you out.
Pick yourself up by your own bootstraps.
Absolutely.
I'm trying to keep my head down and just grind out open mics and get as much stage time as I possibly can. And I'm excited for these book shows, and I'm happy to have them. And I don't think it's anybody, like, why would you get mad that I could be passive and wait to get booked on something, or we can go out and set something up and talk to the owner of the venue.
Yeah.
Why would you want to be a hater about it?
there's a couple of Captain Save a shows out there who think that it's their motherfucking business to try to sabotage something. I don't understand when someone who is outside of a situation doesn't know all the conversations you've had with somebody, doesn't know what you're doing or how you got there, all of a sudden comes out of the woodwork and says, hey, this guy is doing this and it's not right. I'm exposing it. Now, I had the reason why I'm asking Corey Williams, I know you even alluded to me not asking you these questions on the phone when we had a little pre-interview the other day, because this has been on my mind, and here's why. There's a guy called Eric Wargo, and I, you know, had him on the Highway Diary podcast, right, a long time ago, like episode 36 or something. You know, also on the Self-Indulgent podcast, I can be a little rowdy. Maybe I insult them or something. Well, this gumshoe, you know, starts to snoop around and is claiming that I'm stealing a roast battle from the Los Angeles-based comedy store.
I brought up that shitbag, Hollerback. There's this guy, Eric Hollerback. He came from New York, and then he stayed in L.A. for a little bit, and now he lives in New Orleans. He tried to take the roast battle. Like, he's this guy I called him out recently on it. This is my recent point of pride. He's like, yeah, we're opening the New Orleans chapter of the roast battle in New Orleans and at this theater.
Did they go, you can't there take is that nothing, shit?
There is nothing, I don't know legally the full ramifications of taking someone's show idea and name and logo and all that, but he's claiming that, you know, hey, we're bringing the roast battle to this theater in New Orleans. Looking at, like, the official roast battle, like, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, mm-hmm. no mention of the show at all, you know, and what really got me going is, I was kind of poking fun at, like, people in New Orleans hate his guts.
Already?
Yeah, yeah, and so I've kind of posted a picture of him talking about, like, a screen cap of him in a Facebook group saying, hey, I'm bringing the roast battle to New Orleans, and then just people with, like, go away, we hate you, fuck off, and so I thought that was hilarious, and then Keith Carey's like, did this guy just straight up steal the roast battle? Boo! And I was thinking, like, wait, how come these comics don't know? Because I'm not tight with Brian Moses. Like, mm-hmm. I don't mean that in a way I don't like him. I just haven't really officially met the dude. So I don't know for sure, but it's like these guys that are tight with the roast battle are like, this guy's just fucking stealing the show? Like, I would think if someone was tight with the show, they would know,
mm-hmm.
oh, yeah, don't tell anyone, but they're opening a New Orleans chat. Which, first off, fucking New Orleans is it's a cool town, but
like,
really?
There's New York, there's other places you'd
want to,
yeah, you'd want to blow, like, up.
Comedy cities. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, there was nothing mentioned on the official channel, so I thought that was super fishy, and so I called him out in the thread, like, yeah, what the fuck is this? Do you have an all-Negro wave? Do you have a DJ, a house racist? Like, all this other shit? Like, what's going on? And, like, he's like, delete that shit. You know, if you're gonna accuse me of stealing, you know, you should message me privately. It's fucking rude. But then I actually eventually messaged Brian Moses, and he's like, "Hey, thanks for that, man. I'm gonna talk to this guy."
I've been in touch with those guys, at, you know, at the Comedy Store Roosevelt. I used to live in Los Angeles. You know what I mean? So people think I don't know some of these people. I do know these people, right? And he hasn't been privy to my conversations with these people, right? So I put it together. I could call it insult war. I could call it this. It doesn't matter. But I have this opportunity now where I can fund everybody come flying over here, pay everybody, give them a licensing fee, give them anything they want, and have a good shows with them. You know what I mean? Like, I had blessings. This is a different city across the country. I could have called it something else. Or you could just shut up, have me fly these people over here, pay them all, and have everything work out for everybody. And here's what really bothered me about it. I kept texting him, saying, let's talk about this. I can fill you in on whatever detail you want. This gumshoe ain't going for the one source where he can actually just ask me, right? The first I'm hearing that he has all this shit is on his podcast, because he would prefer to score brownie points or whatever, pretending like he exposed something instead of just talking to me. So I just don't, you know what I mean? I get very upset when Like, I just feel like there's a way you handle things, right? And if you're wondering about what I'm doing, and then I call him and I say, hey, what are you talking about? I see you posting weird things on Facebook, and then all of a sudden this podcast comes out. He won't take my phone call. He won't take it. And then he texts me, don't call me. It's too dangerous to take a phone call from you. I'm like, too dangerous? You're scared of the phone now? Like, I would have been on the podcast, and he could have grilled me about it, and I could have answered questions. And I'm doing this now because I can't get him on the phone. I was trying to call him. He says he doesn't want to talk to me. So if you want to talk with podcasts, we can talk with podcasts. I'm a little fired up. But this is what I'm going through now, too, you know? All these extra motherfuckers want to say stuff. And it's like, he's got a backyard show called Thunder Goat in Los Angeles. He's stealing that idea. I've seen other people have backyard comedy shows where people do stand-up. I know the Improv is stealing from the Laugh Factory, is stealing from the Comedy Cellar, is stealing from the Comedy Store, because they're doing stand-up shows. They're all ripping off each other. At what is patentable? What is, you know what I mean? It's just, it doesn't make any sense to me to spend any time smashing somebody else's show. Because when you, instead of promoting your own show, because when you're smashing other people's shows, you're smashing everybody who's on those shows as well. So that's my rant. Do you guys have questions? Did you not understand what I was, any point of contention?
I think I followed you pretty well, and with small parallels into some things that I've had to deal with.
That's
that
why
we're not going to get into.
Right.
But I completely understand where you're coming from on the side of, if you have an issue, there's a right and wrong way about going to settle it. There's the way where you can actually try to come to an understanding, make a difference. If you see that a person is doing something that you find questionable, approaching that person in private and trying to help with that, help maybe change their mind or better, just have a better understanding of it, is a much better way of just trying to blast somebody in a way that they can't even defend themselves, because you're only hearing one side of the story when you aren't having a conversation. You're just talking and ranting, and it's just, it's ridiculous.
I also, speaking of not having a conversation, okay, I had the entertainer extraordinaire Jeff McCormick on my podcast. I love him. I've apologized on my podcast, but some people still always want to bring up to my face, and I feel ostracized at certain clubs because they feel like I was making fun of him. If he feels like that, I'm very sorry, and I don't want him to think that at all. But I call him, he doesn't want anything to do with me, I see him, he wants me to have a restraining order, and it's like, you know, I understand this is a weird situation, you know, I'm being controversial on this episode and shit, but it's like, can everybody shut the fuck up so I can apologize to somebody? Does everybody has to fucking crotch into my fucking situation and yap their fucking mouths when it's between me and somebody else, and let me try to apologize, please? Because, you know, from what I know, like, just like you guys here, this seems like a consensual podcast. Maybe you go home and you start, like, you know what I mean? If you have a problem with when I post the episode, please call me and say, take that episode down or take that part out, and I'll be very accommodating. If every time I see you later, you're so angry at me that you don't want me around you, and then you text me that you're going to call the police, I don't know what that means. I don't know how to help that situation. I don't know how to fix it, because all these extra motherfuckers are in his ear manipulating the situation when I'm trying to say I'm sorry, and I did not want him to feel uncomfortable. And that's my position, and I can't say enough how funny I think he is, how incredible I think Jeff McCormick is, and how funny he is. And I just want to get that straightened away as well, as long as we're fucking squashing every fucking rumor I'm having. But it's always, as Jackie Jenkins Jr. was telling me, extra motherfuckers be coming around, you know, trying to fuck, like, putting weird things in people's heads, when it's like, hey, how about you promote your show? How about you spend time doing that? Hey, how about you fucking, you know, work on your material? But everyone wants to work on everything else except their stand-up routines, you know what I mean? Everyone wants to be like, oh, this is more important, so let me escape and feel indignant, and, oh, I'm busy being right about some shit, so I can't accept your phone call right now.
When I came into doing comedy, I was more under the impression that everybody tried to help each other a little bit. When you got off stage, if they thought that a joke wasn't hitting the way it needed to be, that they might offer a little bit of constructive criticism. But
away from other people.
Away from other people. Basically, just kind of almost like a brotherhood to say, you know, we're trying to help each other and boost each other up. But what I've come to find out is that there are a number of people that are more interested in the dramedy of things than anything else. The drama and comedy mixture. And that's just not necessary.
Justin Evans.
I got no beef with anybody. I'm trying to meet as many motherfuckers as I can and just do my sets and get high with them maybe afterwards. But.
And to a large extent, I feel the same
but,
way.
You know, yeah, I'm a kiss
I would
ass.
Love to feel like that. I would love to feel like that. When you listen to the attack that I've endured, by it's just like, it's bizarre to me. I don't understand why we can't have a phone call and we can chat it out. If I am fucking up as a friend, if I am fucking up as a comic, please let me know and I'll be cool, you know? But I don't like getting blasted. I don't like, I got you, aha. And it's like, no, I'm sorry about that. No, I got you. It's okay, I'm sorry. It's so, you know what I mean? And just this remaining fucking witch hunt, you know, I don't get it. I try to be nice to people. I know I'm stressed out, but it's like, you know, I know I'm going on a long fucking ramble. This podcast is for you two to, you know, but I gotta put out some fires around me too that are just driving me fucking up a wall, you know?
I find it interesting because I feel the same way as Justin does, but it seems like they don't feel the same way about me.
Right.
And I think you're feeling the same thing, is that you never wanted to have any problems with anybody, and you certainly didn't seek it out, but it just kind of got thrust upon you.
Yeah.
And you're just trying to make the best of the situation without making things worse. And I think that's really where I am, is that I don't want to blast anybody. I even actually was able to mend a couple of fences with some people here recently, so that's one of the major reasons why I don't want to delve into the issues, is because these things have been put behind us. I don't want to leave them behind us.
Right.
And that being the case, right now, I just want to look forward to the show, to my comedy, and to moving forward.
I'm just frustrated because you've had the conversation and it's been mended. Your fences have been mended, right?
Right.
And I have not been allowed to have the conversation.
Right.
So I'm put in this perpetual thing where it's like, I've already, you know what I mean, tried as much as I can to say I'm sorry to Jeff McCormick, and still he doesn't want anything to do with me. And it's just, it's like, please allow me to at least defend myself face to face. And all these other comics, like, I'm getting texts from him saying all the other comics are right about you. Well, I'm the only one who has an opinion. Like, if you want to know my opinion of you, go to the fucking source, man. Don't go to this. I don't know. It's just, I haven't been allowed to have that conversation, and I feel like that has been, like, a targeted and by sober-minded people. They are insisting that I don't squash that beef because they'd prefer the beef, which I don't, I want it to be over with. I just want to, I love this art, and, you know, I'm banned from places. This is affecting my stage time, so that's why I get really indignant about it, because I'm a comic in my DNA before I'm a boy. Like, I feel like I'm a comic before I'm anything. Before I have a pulse, I'm a comic. You know, in the fabric of my fucking DNA, that's what I am. That's how I think about the world.
You and think I could piss behind that van?
Yeah, definitely.
I feel that I have a small piece of advice for you that I think might help with your situation. And the truth is that I know you've heard this before by another mature comic, because I was there when he was talking to you about it. And the very similar advice was given to me by another mature comic, which was to rise above it.
Yeah.
I know it's hard. It's easier said than done.
Yeah.
But, and that was what I was able to do before the fences were mended. And I think that contributed a lot to mending the fences, even though I wasn't thinking that that was going to happen. I just didn't want it to keep growing.
Yeah.
And I know your situation is not exactly parallel, so I'm not trying to tell you you're doing anything wrong. I'm only trying to reiterate that it's better to rise above it
right.
as much as you possibly can.
Right. Well, Well, I appreciate that. I don't want to ever get into this shit again. I just want to squash it now. And, you know, it's on now. How I feel about this stuff is on the record. So at least I've had the conversation out loud to something. You know what I mean?
Well, I'll put it like this. What I've found more true about comedy than any other factor in comedy is that eggshells are everywhere. Yeah. So you're not going to be able to completely avoid stepping on them. Just try to make as low of a crack as possible.
You had a successful pee-pee. That was good. That was you were trying to.
Did you get it? Did you record it?
I heard it in the background. I'm not sure if my Zoom recorder heard it, but you're trying to stay as neutral as possible. But thanks, Justin, for allowing me to open up there and hog a lot of this fucking airtime. But you know, it's my podcast and shit, so fuck y'all. I'm gonna do what I want. Any departing words? We got to wrap this bitch up.
Well, we look forward to seeing you soon.
May 3rd. Thanks for booking me.
May 3rd. We have you. And we also have a wonderful headliner that's going to be going on just after you. You're, to a certain extent, going to be opening up for her. And she's really excited to do the show. And we are super excited to have her. So that's what we're really looking forward to. And we're waiting on May 3rd.
Sonya King. All
right. Yeah, Miss Sonya King. She's been on The View. She's been on Good Morning America. She is an actual road touring comic. She's been doing this over 15 years, and it shows because she's hilarious.
This next Sunday roast battle at the La Nuit will take place May 17. Doors open at 7:30. Shows at 8 p.m. You can get your tickets on brown paper tickets. You can pay $5 cash at the door. You can go Groupon. You can go Living Social. It's making my head explode accepting all these different fucking distribution methods at the door, but that's what we're fucking doing. Anything else we want to... Okay, we took care of a lot of business. I'm fucking exhausted. I'm going to pass out. This has been another episode of the Highway Diary in the motherfucking bag. Thanks to my guests, Corey Williams and Justin Evans, after an incredible... battle, you know, we're all better for it. Peace out, motherfuckers.